I know you hear it a lot, and you're going to hear it a lot more in the next 27 days, whatever it is, and you're going to stress about it, and you're going to worry about it. You're going to have loose sleep over it, and you're probably going to just generally be in a state of, best I can say is, because on November, whatever day it is, it's a Tuesday, I know that, I think it's the 8th, something like that, there's going to be an election in this country, and we're going to decide who will run this country for the next 4 years. And a lot of people are stressing over that. Such is life. I almost wish God would come down and tell us what the results are going to be. That'd make the next 27 days a lot easier and a lot cheaper. I could enjoy TV for the next 27 days. But he's not going to do that. But we have to have faith that God knows what's going to happen and God will guide us through. But you know what? No matter what happens, I think the important thing that we need to remember, and I'm going to look at this in my lesson, is we, as Christians, cannot lose our focus. Our focus isn't November 8th. Yes, we need to know what happens on November 8th because that's going to shape our country. But our focus should be on when I meet God. Okay? Because no matter what Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump or the Republican Party or the Democratic Party will do to this country, we will survive. We might be less for it, but we will survive. But I need to look forward to that day when I will meet God in heaven, because that's why I'm here today. Don't lose my focus. I want to look at a couple examples in the Scriptures, and I want to ask you, how did they not lose their focus? First one is the conclusion of a life. 2 Timothy chapter 4, verses 6 through 8. 2 Timothy 4, 6 through 8. For I am now ready to be offered, and the time of my departure is at hand. I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. Henceforth there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that day, and not to me only, but unto all them also that love his appearing. Wouldn't that be a great final statement for me to make? I am now ready to be offered, and the time of my departure is at hand. I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. Oh, to be able to say that when I know my time is drawing to an end. I haven't faced that yet. I know I'm sure there are some brothers in the church that have faced that. And I got a feeling. I keep thinking Tom Woody. I got a feeling that's probably the way he felt. He'd finished his course. He'd done the best he could. He kept the faith. And there is laid up for him a crown of righteousness, which the Lord righteous judge shall give me at that day. And not to him only, but to all them that love his appearing. I think that's why we're here today, because we love the fact that he will appear someday. And we will receive that crown of righteousness. That being said, consider what I use that word consider a lot. I was trying to think of that the other day. I was talking to somebody about church when I was riding in the van, and you know, words we use a lot. And I said, I used to give lessons a lot, and my daughter always got on me because I used this word and I couldn't think of what the word was. Well, this morning as I'm drying off after my shower, consider came to mind. Consider this. Let's consider this morning. 2 Corinthians chapter 11, 24 through 27. 2 Corinthians 11, 24 through 27. Of the Jews, five times received I 40 stripes, save one. Thrice was I beaten with rods. Once was I stoned. Thrice I suffered shipwreck. A night and a day I have been in the deep. In journeyings often, in perils of waters, in perils of robbers, in perils by my own countrymen, in perils by the heathen, in perils in the city, and perils in the wilderness, and perils in the sea, and perils among false brethren, and weariness and painfulness, and watchings often, in hunger and thirst, in fastings often, in cold and nakedness. Man, my life's been easy compared to that. I mean, what's the worst I've put up with? Obnoxious fellow employees, obnoxious bosses, kids that sometimes don't want to listen to me, cars that don't want to cooperate, things that break. That's nothing compared to what this man put up with. But you realize this is the same man that we just read about in 2 Timothy that said, I have finished my course. I have run the race. I'm ready to be offered. Oh, to be able to say that after what little piddly things my life offers me. Paul had been through many trials and struggles in his walk with God. How many of us, honestly, would be able to withstand such trials and self and sufferings and remain ever vigilant and steadfast? Brethren, I think I'd have trouble sometimes. If somebody came at me with a stick and was going to beat me senseless with it for my faith, I'd have to ask how my faith is going to hold up. I pray to God it would hold up, but I'd have to wonder. I've never been shipwrecked. I've been in the ditch a few times. No biggie. Never been on my top, but I've been in the ditch. Nothing compared to that. I've never been on the East Coast of the United States and lost my entire house to a hurricane. And you know what? They'll probably lose it again someday if they rebuild. But they're doing that to themselves. But I've never suffered that much. I've never lost. Worst I can say is I've lost a job. Okay? Yeah, that hurt Doug. But yet, Doug remained faithful to God, I hope, during that time. So we need to remain ever vigilant and steadfast so that we can say that at the end. Let's look at Acts chapter 7, starting the 54th verse. Acts chapter 7, starting the 54th verse. When they heard these things, they were cut to the heart, and they gnashed on him with their teeth. But he, being full of the Holy Ghost, looked up steadfastly into heaven and saw the glory of God and Jesus standing on the right hand of God, and said, Behold, I see the heavens opened and the Son of Man standing on the right hand of God. Then they cried out with a loud voice and stopped their ears and ran upon him with one accord and cast him out of the city and stoned him. And the witnesses laid down their clothes at a young man's feet whose name was Saul. And they stoned Stephen, calling upon God and saying, Lord Jesus, receive my spirit. And he kneeled down and cried with a loud voice, saying, Lord, lay not this sin to their charge. And when he had said this, he fell asleep. I've been hit by a snowball before. It hurt. I think it was an ice ball. They were mean. I've been hit by sticks. I've been hit by rocks thrown by my mower. Possibly by my kids, I don't know. I've never been hit by a frying pan thrown by my wife, but I'm sure in 31 years the thought has crossed her mind. But yet here's a man who was stoned to death for his belief, for his faith in God, his professing God. And did you notice who they threw the coats at the feet of? Saul. The same Saul that became Paul that said, I have run my race. I finished the course. So Saul wasn't with God all the time? No, Saul was against God for a long time. And he was vigilant at it. He was good at his job until God smacked him around and turned him around. Okay? So it's possible to turn around. But how many of us could undergo a stoning? And that's got to be painful. I mean, I've dropped a tool on my foot before and it hurt. I wouldn't want to think about stones being thrown at my head. And I'm sure these weren't small stones. These were pretty good-sized rocks they were throwing because they meant to inflict damage, and they were hurting. But yet he did not veer off the course. We need to remember Job. Had Job ever in his entire life lost a sheep or a cow or a crop? I'm sure he had. But yet he still had the best and the most of everything. But yet, when it came right down to it, he lost it all. Did he lose his focus? No. All those around him were going crazy. It ain't worth it. You know, you could have a better life. Just say, forget it, God, I'm done with you. It didn't happen. We have Daniel. We have Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. All of them remained faithful throughout their trials. The way I think they did it is the way I'm going to do it. There's a song in a red book, number 561. I try to remember the story behind this song, and I'm sure it has something to do with a man's family that perished in a boat accident. And he went back, I think, to the same spot where the boat went down and wrote this song. But I think they did it because they all knew that it was well with their souls. They knew they had a better thing waiting for them. When peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, thou hast taught me to say, it is well with my soul. Though Satan should buffet, though trials should come, let this blessed assurance control, that Christ hath regarded my helpless estate, and hath shed his own blood for my soul. My sin, oh the bliss of this glorious thought, my sin, not in part but the whole, is nailed to his cross, and I bear it no more. Praise the Lord, O my soul. And Lord, haste the day when the face shall be sight, the cloud shall be rolled back as a scroll, the trump shall resound, and the Lord shall descend, even so it is well with my soul. It is well with my soul, it is well with my soul. They knew they had a better thing coming if they remained faithful to Christ and to God. And that happened. That's what made Stephen be able to sit there and be stoned to death. Not stoned to unconsciousness. Not stoned to, we're going to knock some sense into you. Stoned to death. That's what made Paul go through the many trials he went through. The same trials and troubles he probably inflicted on people for years. But he was able to overcome all those when it happened to him. And how much hurt did he go through when he was suffering those, knowing that he had inflicted the same things on people and probably cost them their lives, but yet he was trying to remain faithful to Christ. I was at the Brookfield meeting, and John Morris was giving a lesson. He brought up the song of a few years ago where everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to go now. And I liked that song, but after he brought it up, I don't like that song so much anymore. Because everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to go now. They want to live it up. They want to have fun. Am I ready to go now, if that's what happens? Am I ready to climb in my car? And if I'm driving my car down 163, I think that's happened twice, at least once this week. Wrong way driver, head on collision. I'm gone. Am I ready to go? Is my faith strong enough that I'm ready to go? Is it well enough with my soul? If you think about it, I ought to just go lock myself in the house because I can't control anything that happens. But if I stay in my house, worst that's going to happen is a mouse is going to run across the floor maybe and my wife's going to freak out. Or a big old spider is going to crawl out of something and a Kelsey's going to freak out. Or a snake's going to roll into the house and I'm really going to freak out. It'll happen. But it is well with my soul if I remember that I have Christ and God in my life. They were confident in their future outcome of eternity with God that they were able to say it is well with my soul. Romans chapter 8, starting in the 35th verse. Romans 8, 35. Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall tribulation, or distress, or persecution, or famine, or nakedness, or peril, or sword? As it is written, for thy sake we are killed all the day long, we are counted as sheep for the slaughter. Nay, in all these things we are more than conquerors through him that loved us. For I am persuaded that death nor life, nor angels, nor principalities, nor powers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor height, nor depth, nor any other creature, shall be able to separate us from the love of God which is in Christ Jesus. Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Doug will separate us from me from the love of Christ. Nobody else will take the love of Christ away from me except me. I do it to myself. And why do I do it? Because I'm afraid I'll be killed all day long. I'm afraid that I won't be a conqueror. I'm not strong enough to overcome. And I'm not persuaded that death nor life nor angels nor principalities shall be able to overcome. If you don't believe that, check the stress level of America in the next 27 days. Because I can guarantee you there's a lot of people think the world's going to come to an end in 27 days, no matter what happens. It's done. It's over. You know, I've been alive 54 years. I've been voting since I was 18. I vote in a lot of elections. I'm still voting. So as bad as it gets, God still is in control. Okay? So I just need to remember that God is in control. But Doug will be the one that separates me from the love of God. Paul warns us to beware of dogs and beware of evil workers. You know what? They talk about the big dogs, but sometimes it's the little dogs that get you. I talked about it one time before when I was doing household repairs. You know, I'd walk into houses where dogs, I could ride them like horses. They were nice. They'd lick my hand. But it's the little ankle biters that get you. The little bitty yippy ones. Yip, 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 yip. They just like to yip. They like to ride in the car with the owner, looking out the window. But then when they get in the house, they own the joint, and they're going to bite you. So it's the little things we need to worry about. I worry about the big things, forget the little things. I need to worry as much about the little things as the big things. You know what? It isn't like we don't have an example. Did Christ come to this earth and just sit in a comfy chair every day for 33 years and think, I'm here, guys, it's all okay, you're safe? No. He went out and he lived just like we live. He suffered just like we do. Hebrews chapter 4, starting in the 14th verse. Seeing then that we have a great high priest that has passed into the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold fast our profession. For we have not a high priest which cannot be touched with the feelings of our infirmities, but was in all points tempted like we are, yet without sin. Let us therefore come boldly unto the throne of grace, that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need. But was tempted in all points, was in all points tempted like we are, yet without sin. If you think Christ came to this earth and just sat in a big comfy chair, it didn't happen. He was out there. He was among the people. He was suffering like we suffer. Did he stub his toe? Probably. I wear nice shoes and I stub my toes. He was wearing, I'm guessing, sandals. And I think it's easy to stub your toes with sandals, and it probably hurts a lot worse. Looking on the lighter side, that's looking on the light side of things. But he suffered. In Matthew chapter 4, 1 through 11, what happened? He was tempted three times by Satan, by the devil. Tempted with power, with glory, and personal gain. Isn't that what I'm tempted with on a daily basis? I can get on the Interstate 235 every morning. First thing I see when I come up off university, assuming I'm not stopping because of cars and I miss it and I hit them all, is a big sign. You could be the winner of... Boy, I love it when he's up for about $222 million. I'm thinking $10 don't look too bad, and if I can win $222 billion or million or zillion, whatever. I ain't won yet. Of course, you got to play to win. I don't play that faithfully. But yet, is Satan tempting me with power, with glory, with honor? Boy, I'd be honored beyond compare if I won that kind of money. But yet, I don't need it. I've got God. I've got a family. I've got a job that gives me everything I need. I'm happy with that. Mark chapter 11. Lest we think Christ was just different. He was different in a way. Mark chapter 11, 15 through 17. Just a quick little snippet here. And then they came to Jerusalem. Jesus went into the temple and began to cast them out that sold and bought in the temple and overthrew the tables of money changers and the seats of them that sold doves, and would not suffer that any man should carry any vessel through the temple. And he taught, saying unto them, It is written, My house shall be called of all nations a house of prayer, and you've made it the den of thieves. You ever lost your temper? You ever thrown something? I don't see Christ losing his temper here. I see righteous indignation on the part of Christ. They were taking his father's house and making it a den of thieves, and he took action. But I don't see him picking up the table and lunging it at people. He's turning them over. He's disrupting their business. He's disrupting things. Me, I get mad, things go flying. Just ask my kids. They've had a few things hurled at them. Was I proud of it? No. Probably a good thing they didn't hit them. I'm a bad thrower, which is why I'm not playing for the Cubs right now. It's a good thing I'm a bad thrower, because had I made contact with it, there might have been some damage. And I would have had to answer for that. But Christ was angry, but he wasn't angry. Okay? He was making a point. But yet, that just proves he did have that emotion as part of his life here on earth. Anger. Okay? He was tempted in all points like we are. He was tempted. He controlled his anger. And you know what? There are examples in scriptures that he got tired. He tells the when he's appointing the apostles or sending them out, the Son of Man hath nowhere to lay his head. And there are examples otherwise where he had to go into the mountains to recover, to rest, to talk to his Father. He got tired. I get tired. But how do I act when I'm tired? Do I act like Christ, or do I act like Tired Doug? That's why my family laughs at me, but I go to bed at 9:15 at night most time now, because I'm tired. But then I wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning because I've had my 5 hours sleep, and then I'm tired the next night. So I need to start going to bed at midnight, and then I'll wake up at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock, and I won't be so tired. I just ain't taught myself that yet. I think what helped these people, these examples are brought up in the Bible, and even Christ himself, was that they never placed value on what they had here. They focused on what they were going to receive. Okay? Yes, they needed food. Yes, they needed comfort. Yes, they needed protection. But yet they knew they had something better coming. Matthew chapter 6, starting in the 19th verse. Matthew chapter 6, starting in the 19th verse. Lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth, where moth and rust doth corrupt, and where thieves break through and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, and where thieves do not break through nor steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. The light of the body is the eye. If therefore thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be light. But if thine eye be evil, thy whole body shall be full of darkness. If therefore the light that is in thee be darkness, how great is that darkness? No man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. Therefore I say unto you, take no thought for your life, what shall you eat or what shall you drink, nor for your body, what shall you put on. Is not the life more than raiment, and the body is not the life more than meat, and the body more than raiment? Boy, that one kind of hits home a little bit, don't it? Take no thought for tomorrow. Take no thought for your life, what shall you eat or what you shall drink. Isn't that why I have a job? I have a job so I can eat and I can drink. I can have clothes on my body. I spent all day yesterday and the day before. No, not really, not that many days. But I will spend, probably starting Wednesday through the end of the week, doing laundry at the Fiorentine house. We have a lot of clothes. We have a lot of dishes. We're not suffering. But yet, would I miss them all if they were gone? That's the question I have to ask myself. Yeah, I'd miss them. But would I miss them to the point where they would cause me to do something to lose my eternal soul? Okay? I've never really been without. I've been blessed. And I hope I'm never without. But as long as I have Christ, I'm never without. Even at my darkest time. Where are your treasures? They will be gone. I have two cars sitting in my yard right now, Aleros, that were real nice cars at one time, but they're rusting out. And they're just rusting out because they're 20 years old almost, or whatever it is. It just happens. Things deteriorate. And I'm 54 years old, I'm deteriorating. I couldn't run a mile if I had to. I can drive a mile with the best of them, but I can't run a mile. But it's because I'm not supposed to be able to. I haven't been trying to do that. Who is your master? You know what? Goodwin Tucker makes my physical life comfortable. It keeps me going. But you know what? They don't provide me any security. You know, it could be gone tomorrow. You know, Goodwin Tucker could decide, oh, we're out of money. You know, we've lost all our factory support. We're bolting the door shut. See y'all later. There's no guarantees. But you know what? My Heavenly Father provides comfort and security for my soul. No matter how bad it gets, if I stay focused on Him, He guarantees me a home in heaven. Matthew chapter 8, 23 through 27. Proof that Christ can calm the storms in our lives. And when he was entered into the ship, his disciples followed him, and behold, there arose a great tempest in the sea, insomuch that the ship was covered with the waves, but he was asleep. And his disciples came to him and woke him, saying, Lord, save us, we perish. And he said unto them, why are ye fearful, O ye of little faith? Then he arose and rebuked the winds and the sea, and there was great calm. But the men marveled, saying, what manner of man is this, that even the winds and the sea obey him? The important point, I think, in this story is that Christ calmed the storm. And I don't think they'd ever seen a storm calmed like that before. I don't know what the reaction would be on the East Coast or West Coast if a hurricane was coming in. That hurricane got to within 15 miles of the coast, and all of a sudden, the sound of thunder and peace be still come out of the clouds, and that storm was calmed. I guarantee you, every church on the east and west coast of the United States would be full that next Sunday morning. They wouldn't know why, but it'd be full. But yet, that's what Christ does for us. But we have to make the effort to ask for that help. His disciples came in and woke him, saying, Lord, save us, we perish. Christ was comfortable. He was asleep. Wasn't bothering him any. His disciples had to come and ask for help. We have to come to Christ and God and ask for help. We see a need in our lives. The waves are overtaking us. We need to come ask for help, and He will calm that storm. How do I become strong? In my physical life, I do it by making an effort. I do it by trial and error. Aren't those the same ways I'm going to strengthen my Christian life? By making an effort and by trial and error. I went to a job Friday afternoon. Should have been a 20-minute job. Putting a thermocouple in a fryer. It's a little thing about this long. Flame hits it, makes your furnace work at home. What we're looking at. How easy is it to change one at home? You know, if it's a 15-minute job. If you drop a tool, it might be 16 minutes. But this job took me over three and a half hours to complete. Not because I was stupid. It's the way it was built. I had to completely disassemble the front half of this fryer. I mean, I never had to do this much work. I was getting frustrated. I was getting aggravated. I was getting angry, but I didn't let it get the better of me. Okay, there was one time I thought, I'm done. I'm out of here. I'm going to leave this thing laid wide open. I'm going to call the office and say, send somebody else up to finish it. I've had it. I didn't do it. I finished the job. When I was done, I thought, it made me happy when I did it because I knew I thought I might have misdiagnosed it, but when I got the thermocouple out, I could see where the factory had pinched a wire, not Doug had pinched a wire. But in order to get to it, I had to completely tear the thing apart. But I did not give up. Now, I had trial and error involved. It was trying my patience. But yet, when I was taking it apart, I had a lot of errors because I was jumping ahead of here where I should have been here trying to take it apart. But I learned a lot through trial and error in my walk with Christ. Am I going to stumble? Yes. Am I going to fall? More than likely. But yet, how I overcome those stumbles and falls and I return to Christ is what makes me confident in my outcome. In our spiritual lives, we need to be in constant learn mode. We need to be studying. We need to be opening our Bibles on a daily basis. We need to be reading the Scriptures. We need to be in prayer. We need to keep in touch with our lifeline. Okay? I need a lifeline at work. I can pick up the phone, call 15 other guys, get some help. I need help with spiritual things. I can call any of the people sitting here in this building and get spiritual help. But yet I need to keep Christ on the line too, and God on the line, because they are the true lifelines that I need. We all need to be always seeking and always thanksgiving for what we have. James chapter 1, verse 17. Why do we need to do this? Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, and cometh down from the Father of lights, with whom is no variableness, neither shadow of turning. So every good gift and every perfect gift is from above. How can I not feel that I'm getting perfect gifts from above when He sends His Son to this earth to live like me and to show me that I can live like Him in eternity if I will just follow Him? And it comes down from the Father of lights, with whom is no variableness nor shadow of turning. He's not going to turn away. The only way He'll turn away is if we turn away from Him and we're casting the shadow backwards. Because God will never turn away from us as long as we accept Him. But yet we need to remember that every good gift and every perfect gift is from above. Be hard to think about when you're in Stephen's situation, kneeling down there and they're hurling rocks at you. Now, was those perfect gifts, those rocks coming at him? No, the perfect gift was the fact he knew where he was headed, and he was able to overcome that. I've never really suffered in my life. I think about that a lot. I don't know what I would ever do. The closest I can think of was when my father had his open-heart surgery, and you drive to Indianapolis wondering if he's going to survive, because he's not a young man. I've never had that. I've never lost a house in a flood. I've never had a barn fall down and hit my wife's head and kill her like one of the evangelists over in Michigan. I've never suffered like some people have suffered, but yet they remain faithful. I hit a little hiccup in the road, and I got to wonder if my faith is going to pull me through. I pray to God that it will. But you know what? If we always remember, it is well with my soul, then we will overcome. Trials will come. The song doesn't say trials aren't going to come. You know, tempests like sea billows will roll, but it's well with my soul. But it tells us that the Lord will come again, and that's what makes it well with my soul. If you are here this morning and you have not accepted Christ into your life, you have not put away the old man and been baptized into his death, burial, and resurrection, and accepted a chance at eternity with him. We always give you that opportunity. There's never a chance when we can't open the doors of baptism and have a baptism and accept somebody into the family. If for some reason you've fallen away, you've stumbled, you need to come forward, you need to make amends for what you've done wrong, we're willing to accept anybody that wants to come back as we stand and sing the closing song.